Fisher Body Historical Team interview. Today is January 26, 2006. The time is approximately 12 noon. We're at the UAW Local 602 Frank Dreyer Greenhouse. First, we'll introduce the team.
John Fedewa.
Cheryl McQuaid.
And I'm Marilyn Coulter. Today, we're with Mr. Lyle McFadden. Could you please give us your name and spell it for us, please?
Lyle McFadden, L-Y-L-E, M-C, capital F-A-D-D-E-N.
And your address, please. Your address?
221 Lahoma, Lansing, Michigan, 48915.
And your mail? Are you married?
My wife passed.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Have any children?
I have four boys.
Four boys?
And four grandkids.
Awesome. Now, were you born? Where were you born?
I'm born in St. Louis Hospital in Lansing, Michigan.
What was your education?
I had 3 years of college.
And?
I graduated from Lansing Sexton in 1955.
And did you have any military experience?
No, I didn't.
And what did your parents do? What did your parents do?
My dad worked for a school district, and my mother worked for East Lansing School District. She drove the bus.
Okay. And I take it you were in school before. What did you do before you hired into Fisher Body?
Worked for the city of Lansing in the garbage department.
In the garbage department. Okay. Well, before we get into our Fisher Body history, you were born right here in Lansing. So, being born here in Lansing, did you have any prior, knowledge of Fisher Body?
Yes, because I walked by it when I went to school. It's right across the street from Sexton.
Okay. So, what did you think about it?
What I think about Fisher Body?
Yeah, what did you think about Fisher Body as a child?
It's great. I raised four boys.
Mm-hmm. But before you, before you came in,
when I was
walking
a kid,
to school, did you have any?
You could look in the windows in and see people working, and he had a big old Fisher Body sign in the yard, made out of flowers, and you used to go, you'd pass it when you went by, and it was beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Did you know anybody who worked in
Yes, neighborhood. So everybody in Lansing worked in the Everybody in my neighborhood did. Mm-hmm. Even their parents did, their dad did.
So Fisher Body was considered a good place for the neighborhood?
Oh, definitely.
As
my mother would say, it was a blessing.
Your mother would say Fisher Body was a blessing?
No, she thought Fisher Body was a blessing. Because people, you lived good. You worked for General Motors.
So people who worked for General Motors was always considered a good worker.
Yeah.
So, what year did you hire into Fisher Body?
November 7th,
1956. And, now you said you had an education, so you were, you had 3 years of college. Was that prior to hiring into Fisher Body?
When I started working for Fisher Body, and then I went to LCC. Mm-hmm. And you weren't working year round then. You had summers off I went to school, and then when I went on security, mm-hmm. we took fire and safety and police administration.
Okay.
So
when you hired in, when you hired in the Fisher Body, mm-hmm. can you remember what your first day was like here?
Yes, I do. It was hard for me, but I needed a job. I went in the paint department, and I worked there for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Which I didn't mind hard work, really. But, so then when I worked on the line, and I was a relief man, I worked in the paint department, wet deck, and had some good foremen. Because being from Lansing, some of my foremen were, I went to school with their kids.
Oh, so you knew.
So we grew up together, so they knew me from that.
Can you tell me what was a wet deck?
It was where they sand the cars before they paint them. But it was water. You use water mm-hmm. and sand it out. I don't know if they call it moist yet. No, it's not there anymore. I don't think they do.
So now, you came in. I'm going to back up just a minute. And I just said, so you came into Fisher Body. Had you planned to come in here after high school? What made you come into Fisher Body?
A job.
Just a job?
Just a job. Back then, you could get any plant. You get the plants easy if you were you were the age. I came out of school young, so like in the first year, I we did some dishwashing and pots and pans out to Michigan State. But when I went to when I got in the plant, it was different. Speak up.
So, you worked in the wet deck, and you were lucky enough to have a supervisor that you knew because you went to school with most the kids.
Lansing wasn't that big. See, Lansing wasn't very big in them days. The railroad tracks were outside the city. Mm-hmm. So, there would be outside the city, and people live right out here, And so, I knew, that a lot of them knew me from sports, because I played sports in high school. And so, it was kind of a section like a community school. Uh-huh. So a lot of them knew me from there, so and it helps.
That helps because they knew you. Yeah. So, what was it like? And what year did you hire in again?
56. 1956.
In 1956. In 1956, were there many African Americans working in the plant?
Well, not a whole lot. They were, it was still in the 50s, it still was a certain amount of segregation. Mm-hmm.
So how did any of that affect you in the plant?
No, not me. It, at the time, I was more worried about working. And I said, that's what I, punching in and punching out.
You punched in and you punched out.
And you worked and you, mm-hmm. And you lived good, so you got paid. Mm-hmm.
So what was it like working in the paint department? And you did the wet deck, any other kind of job?
It was kind of scary, and it was tough because you knew if you messed up, you wouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. So you got the hang of it. It didn't bother you. Mm-hmm. I had brothers work here, work in the plant. Mm-hmm. So,
how did you learn your job? Did it take you a long time to learn?
No, not really. Being a, it was I was an athlete, so it wasn't like I was mm-hmm. uncoordinated.
Ah, I see. Yeah. So, you were 18 when you hired in?
Yeah.
So were there, did you hire in on day shift or the night shift? Or?
They were swing shifts then.
Swing shifts? So how would that work?
5 weeks on days and 5 weeks on nights.
Oh, what was that like?
It was getting used to it, but it was a job. You didn't really have a whole lot of say about it, Did you want to work? Uh-huh. Or you didn't want to work. If you wanted to work, you swung.
So how long did that process of swinging shifts?
I can't remember what year they went out in. I think in late 50s we voted for us. So you froze the shifts. So you were, and then I went on to stay on nights.
And then you stayed on nights. Yeah. That was your preferred. Why did you like nights?
Because I worked for the city in the daytime by the garbage in the summer.
So you kept two jobs?
I kept two jobs most of my life.
Wow. Two jobs. Now, was the assembly work that easy that you were able to do two jobs at once? Or was it just because you were young you were able to do it?
I was younger. Mm-hmm. When you're younger, you don't know. So it's, like I said, it's something you don't do when you got old, when you get older.
So what types of hours did you work?
On the garbage, I got on the truck at 6 o'clock, and I'd be done probably most of the time. I averaged about 10 o'clock because you had so many, it was garbage cans in them days. Mm-hmm. You had so many cans you had to pick up. You had to go to a neighborhood and stuff in them days. It was good exercise.
So how many hours did you work in the plant at night?
Well, you didn't work year-round in them days. You didn't work a whole year. You were done in the summer.
So it didn't work in the summer?
The plant didn't work year-round. I think the first year they worked year round was in 59.
In 59?
59, because I remember Eisenhower was president, and we worked through the summer. And it was hot in there. I mean, they didn't have air conditioning. It wasn't like it is now. It was summertime. It was hot.
It was hot.
The ovens were hot, too. They used to kind of like to bake the paint on.
So now, are you saying like July and August you didn't work, or August you didn't work?
You worked off in the summer.
The whole summer?
And then you went back in September.
Now, was that what was considered a changeover? Were they changing?
Oh, they have changeover too, yeah.
Oh, so that was in addition to the model change.
Yeah, you had a changeover. But it was part of when there was a downtime.
Oh, okay.
But you didn't... like I said, it was a lot of times you were down in the summer because they didn't sell cars that much in the summer or something.
Oh.
They had them build up in their, mm-hmm. But a lot of other people had second jobs or summer jobs. You know,
oh.
Some were farmers, some were so everybody had something to do in the summer.
Well, now how long did you work in paint?
From 56 to 66.
56 to 66.
Yeah.
And did you do all the wet deck the whole time you were there?
I've seen paint the whole time. Yeah, I did mostly wet deck, and I think most of the time I was in the wet deck. Sometime I went on sealer and did I was a relief person, so I had to learn a lot of jobs.
Oh,
yeah.
So what happened after 1966?
I went on security.
You went on security?
Yeah.
So you went on security for general orders?
Yeah.
And how was that? Can you explain that? How did that work? How did you happen to go into security?
Well, plant two. They tore out the paint department. I didn't want to go in the body shop. So I went to, plant two. They had a thing, you go to plant two, front end line. And I went over there and worked 2 years. And that when I went over there, they had me take a foreman's test. It was mostly just geometry and a little bit of algebra. And so when I went back to Fisher Body after 2 years, I was in 61 and 62 when I went back to Fisher Body. They were starting to integrate salary,
mm-hmm.
So they called me and asked me if I was still interested in being a foreman. I said no. I didn't think I'd want to put up with anybody. So then Buckmaster who. He went to school with my older brothers, and he told me about. He said, "What you ought to think about going on security." He said, So I said, "I don't know." I said, "I didn't really mind." And then he told me that you can make more money.
Now, who was Buckmaster?
Buckmaster was a number two man at Fisher Body back then. He was the superintendent of paint too.
He was superintendent of paint, yeah, but he later became the assistant plant manager.
Dick Buckmaster, he was also a heck of an athlete back in Sexton when he was in school. But he's been retired now. He was older than I was. I don't remember seeing him play, but I heard uh-huh. about him.
Uh-huh.
So we talked to him. I listened to him and it sounded like.
So he said it was more pay.
Yeah.
So how much more did you get than the work online when you became a security?
A lot more.
I mean, like, how much were you making an hour, per se, as a line worker?
You worked a lot on security.
Uh-huh.
You were working, you worked 6 days a week most of the time. And you made more an hour.
Uh-huh.
And then they changed it to salary, so you got the stock benefits. I mean, it was a great deal. I mean, it was a heck of a deal.
It was a heck of a deal.
Yeah.
And so you went on security.
Yeah.
So how did that go for you, going from being a coworker to being the security for the coworker?
Great, because I always liked I mess around coaching, and I started a lot of little league. The way you probably drive by the down Michigan Avenue, if you look over to the right, when you north, mm-hmm. that baseball diamond, me, Sam McGee, and Javier Cavazos, mm-hmm. we dug that sucker almost by hand. Started out by hand, and I got a guy brought a bulldozer, and he leveled it off, and we made that park. Now it's the city's park, but we started out that, making that baseball park. Really? We had to have a place to play baseball. So that was at that time. We got it done.
So
and
now
I had baseball. I had to. I worked on that board with Babe Ruth, baseball instrumental on the board with Pop Warner. So
oh.
and used to go by St. Joe Park. They're still over there.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was at Sexton, that was when you could use old stuff. And I'd take old football uniforms I get from the coaches and stuff and went out and give, you know, so the kids could play the football.
So you did it for kids in the community?
Yeah.
And so you...
And I was a scout one for a while. I worked with scouts for a while, too.
So now Sam McGee, who was also a security guard, sat there and made the baseball diamond.
Right down the street, down in Michigan. Across from the fire station.
Now, was that public property? Yeah, what was that?
That was just a drainage from the golf course. You know, it was like a swamp down there. And so we got, they started dumping dirt there. Uh-huh. They had big rocks and stuff. So Javier Cavazos said, we got to have a place to play games. So we just got out there. And he told me to show up with a shovel. Then I knew a guy who had a bulldozer. And I went and got him. And I said, we had kids out there helping, and I can't have kids picking up big rocks. So I got this guy to level it off for us. Uh-huh. And we had to pick up the rocks and, you know, move them. But we got the park, got it built.
So that's excellent.
Yeah.
So when you became a security guard, mm-hmm. What were your responsibilities as a security guard? Were you a security guard in Fisher Body?
Yeah, General Motors.
Inside the same facility that you worked at?
Yeah, I was still there, yeah.
And so now you're in Fisher Body and you're a security guard.
No, I'm down here now in the corner.
At that time.
Yeah. Excuse me.
So you were, so what was the responsibilities of security guard?
Check people in and out, check lunch buckets, make sure, you know, people came in, supposed to be there, and notify people, you know, the foremen or the superintendents if they, as a dispatcher too, so I had to answer the phone, and it was a good job. Go on ambulance runs.
So, do you have some good memories that you'd like to share with us about being, as your time of security? I'm sure. How long were you a security guard?
Oh God, I still am.
Well, then if you still are, but I'm sure insofar as in Fisher Body, Plant 6.
Well, I left.
Can you remember some stories from there?
They sold General Motors Security in what's 93.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved over here in 94, 95.
Down at the other building.
Because they were going to run the city out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Just had one dispatcher.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the experience, so they wanted me to go over there. And I knew Lansing.
So, but before we get over there, let's go back into Fisher.
Yeah.
So, do you have some good stories of being security at Fisher Body?
Like I said, I loved it. I love working there. I didn't.
What was one of your favorite days or one of your most interesting days as a security guard at Fisher Body?
Oh God, I think I ain't gonna say payday.
So, Mr. McFadden, can you just walk us through some of your times as a security guard. You know, your good times, your bad times, exciting times, funny times. Just kind of share with us and let us know what it's like being a security guard.
Well, one of the real good parts is that a lot of the kids that played ball for me at Sexton or played for other schools would come in there to work, and I'd get on them about, you know, get on them about working and stuff and tell them they better stay straight, you know, and all that stuff there when they come in, and we'd joke back and forth, and a lot of kids that I knew that played sports came in and worked for General Motors, and then I said, probably that someone went on and become foremen and superintendents, and so I get there, and I said, Fred Ford played for Sexton, him and his, you know, his brother, so then I said, the bad part was probably the worst night was the night that those three guys died in the tank. I said, I was dispatcher. And I knew him. I knew Clay when he was going to college. And Tackett wrestled my son. He was from Old Elsie. He wrestled my son, so I kind of knew him that way. And he was quite an athlete. And I knew Ward because we got to be real good, pretty good friends. And so I'm at the desk, and I answer the desk area, dispatch area. You answer the phone, and you monitor the radios and stuff. And I was sitting there, and all of a sudden I heard Ward say, a call for Bob Perry to come to him. He said, we're in trouble. We're in the paint department. So I yelled for the all security, head for the paint department, second floor. What you gonna do? And the older guy came down to the desk named Burgess, and he said, what you got? I said, I don't know, but take my place. Mm-hmm. I said, take my place, because I said, I'll go up there. So I ran upstairs, got an ambulance with another guy, and we headed up Ramos. We headed up on the paint. Everything was chaotic, running around, everybody running around. So I wanted, you know, you're running, you jump off the doggone ambulance. I said, what's going on? They said, down there. So I ran down there and went to the booth. And one of the guys yelled at me, don't go down there. Said, unless you got a Scott Air Pack on. I said, where's that? And they said, down there. And I looked down there, and it was open. The booth cleaners were working, had been working. And the fumes had overtaken him. Mm-hmm. So they said, go get some more Scott Air Packs. So we went back. I pulled this one, helped this guy named Tucker up, and helped him out of the, he was wet. Mm-hmm. But the center was in the tank, mm-hmm. in the water, and it was burning him. So we put him on the ambulance. So then I had to run back, about 40 yards, and grabbed two Scott Air Pack things, and they were heavy. And I started running back to the guys, and you know, you threw them across the ground to get to them. And so they said, take him down to the hospital. And by the time we'll get the other guys out. Well, I had no idea. Who I should have known because I heard it, but you go blank for a while. Because you just know those guys in the tank. You didn't think they were in that kind of trouble. So then we went down. So I took him. We took him down to the hospital, and the guy down the hospital, and had to take his clothes off, and the nurse had to wash him down because the thinner was burning. So we went back up. And then by that time, we turned around and got. We were back upstairs, and by that time, some more security guards had came. So then we had to go down there and pull them guys up. Then we had to work on them. We had to do our CPR, which was Ward was black, Tackett was white, but he had a lot of hair on him. He had black curly hair. Mm-hmm. Clay had blonde hair, mm-hmm. and we had to pull him up and then take him. We did our suit, but you didn't realize it until. Who it was or anything until you got we'd go from one person to another, rotate one to another, mm-hmm. then the fire department come in and they put a IV and stuff on. When I stood up, Jones turned to me and he said, "Do you know who that is?" And I looked out, and these guys are gray. All of them are gray. They were, the paint and the looking, you couldn't tell. And then I recognized when I saw the paramedic stuff working on them, I look at it, I said, that's Ward. I said, and I heard it, you know. And so then I looked, and Perry was, the other foreman was almost gone. He was, and I, to calm down, Bob, calm down. I said, God, Doug, so I said, he said, I don't know why he went down in that tank. I don't know. I said, hey. And so then we had to leave. John Dean, who played football, like for, we went to junior high together. He was a chief then. And he came in, and I told him, I said, hot thinners in that tank. And he said, don't say that. He said, because, you know, it could be a lawsuit and all that stuff. So let me tell you something. I said, I worked in paint. I said, that stuff was burning, and if you work hot thinner and you turn to talk to somebody, it's pneumonia. It's like ammonia is coming out of your breath, and that's how you could tell. So back then it wasn't safety when I worked in paint. So if you strip a car, you could tell a person who stripped a car because he'd talk and you'd look around, look at it, and say, God, dog, you know, you could smell that. Because it gets in your pores, it would get in your pores. And so then, after that, I had to leave and go back to the dispatch. Mm-hmm. And when I went back to dispatch, I got a call from Clay's wife, and I was writing my reports. And Clay's wife, and she said, Lyle, she said, I got a call, I think it was a prank, said, they say that for me to go to emergency, she was going to have a baby.
Oh, no.
She had one, and she was going to have another one. And so I told her, I said, are you by yourself? And she said, no, yeah. And I said, somebody could go to the hospital with you. And she said, my in-laws live next door. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I advise you to, have them go with you. Well, I didn't know they were dead. We had IV on them and stuff. It looked like they were breathing, so then she said okay, and so she left. So then by that time, she left, and we had people there, and they didn't look good. And so then I went to I looked up, and here come Steve Ward, Bob's brother. He came through the door crying, and he had been in the hospital. And he said, we were supposed to go see my mother tomorrow. He said, now I got to go down there and tell her that Bob's dead. Mm-hmm. And I, God dang, you know what I mean? And then I told him I had his valuables, his wallet and everything. Mm-hmm. And then I sit there, and he was really gone. And so then, it was like one thing after another, how General Motors is. They came in there. Did you get in touch with everybody? People who didn't show up were released. People who didn't come, everybody's supposed to come in, and you call them, and they didn't. They fired them, or they forced them to retire. Some had a lot of time. Yeah. So then, it lasted for last while, because I'm not supposed to give out information, but I did give out some information I just told the lady, told me, I heard they let him die. I said, that's not true. I said, I was up there, and I said, I worked my butt off trying to help your husband. I said, I'm sorry. I knew him. She said, no, I know. I believe you did what you could. I said, yeah. But it was a bad night.
How did that night affect or change what you had to do as a security guard in the future?
Safety came in. Safety, safety, safety. Mm-hmm. Really, they changed a lot of things. They put in some procedures in place that you know, that made it a lot safer. Mm-hmm. Nobody can go in there by themselves. You always had to have a person who enter the confined space. Mm-hmm. Then you have a tenant who watch it. Then you have to have a supervisor there, so you can get people out, you know. And then they start bringing in companies that would suck the fluid out.
Oh.
See the fluid. They said the fluid was, when I looked down, it was gray, but it was, I don't know how many feet of, there was some water still in the tank, stuff still in the tank. They used to take out like 5 gallon pails,
mm-hmm.
but now they suck all that out. You know, they sucked all that
so
out.
So people don't have to go down there.
So they've had to, but the fumes, I guess the fumes and stuff would come up, and it overtook the guys.
Mm-hmm.
But they were young guys, even though they were a lot younger than I was, so that kind of really got me.
Was that the only fatality that you had to deal with in the plane?
I had some heart attacks, you know, in the morning. Older guys would come in the morning and after eating a big breakfast, and they used to have a lot more heart attacks. And from around 8, 9, they'd come to work and they would die. They died. On the weekend, on Mondays it was a big day.
So Mondays was a big heart attack day.
Yeah.
Mondays and in the morning were heart attack time.
Yeah, because the mornings was most people, older people, were gays.
Oh.
So it was different.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't like every day. Yeah, I mean, but you remember.
But it's part of your job that you have to, and that's a hard part of it.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that probably the funniest part is on Fridays
mm-hmm.
or Saturdays you escort drunks out, and that was kind of funny.
That was funny.
Yeah.
What made that funny? Just because these guys
act like they couldn't. They couldn't wait. You know this is Saturday, so I had a few drinks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you had more than a few drinks, buddy. You know, I had them where they'd have people throw up on the floor, and you try to keep them stay still, don't move, because you move, you're gonna throw up. And I'm trying to throw a can over the garbage, one of the waste baskets over there. Now make sure you throw over there. All over the floor. Oh God. Oh no. But then, back then we used to have to escort. You know, we'd give a ride home sometime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then they stopped that. They started. They had to take a cab, which was better because guys would jump out of the car.
They'd jump out of the car.
Yeah. They did jump out the car. I mean, you stop. They jump out the car. You have nothing you can do. You have really a whole lot you can do.
Mm.
But it was interesting though.
Did you ever have to deal with altercations?
Oh yeah, there's fights. Oh yeah, yeah. They'd have fights. But you, like I said, most of the time you just raise your voice and okay, break it up. It's just like a, you know, what you doing? You guys gotta get fired. That kind of attitude.
And they would stop.
They usually stop. Okay. Most of them glad that most guys, just like in school, they always want to say they want to fight, but most of them don't want to fight. At school, kids say, "How do we kick together?" Hey, go ahead. No, okay, because you don't know. I mean, he could kick your butt, so mm-hmm. you better keep your mouth shut. You know, it can go both ways.
Mm-hmm. So, what would you say would be the most rewarding time?
Probably when I got older, retirement.
Retirement,
or going to the mall, and run into some of the guys that I work with, and they're meeting their families
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. And that's kind of nice. That's kind of a nice thing. or now I'm old and I go to Grand Ledge or some places, and some of the guys who are retired mm-hmm. will come up to the fence at the football game and call me, and I go to the fence and shake their hands, and I haven't seen them in 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of nice.
So being part of the salary and things like that, did you look at your co-workers kind of like your family?
Oh, definitely. We still meet and sometimes have breakfast. When I was in the hospital, I had a bunch of them come up there, came up to the hospital last year, and they see how I was doing, and that's kind of nice. The nurse told me, said, "You know, you have so many people come up here, I can't believe it." I said, "But you know, you got to limit people, you know, that can come up." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, you know, I didn't know I was going to come up here, and I didn't really have time. I didn't have time to really notify them that I wasn't going to be." And what so I said, she said, "Okay." So she said, "I'm going to help you out," because she went to school with my son, and she said, "I'm going to help you out." All right, I said, "Okay." So I said, "Okay." So she said, "You can only have so many people, you know." So she said, "You got to get well."
So,
okay.
So, Cheryl McQuaid, Mr. McFadden, you mentioned that you, when you were at the guard checks, that you would check lunch boxes.
Yes.
What did you check lunch boxes for, and what were some of the other things that you were checking for?
You check the badges when they're coming in. You check badges and what they were bringing in the plant. They can't bring alcohol or anything like that. But when they went out, you had to check and lunchbox to make sure that they didn't take out any General Motors products, you know, any things that belong to General Motors, like tools or something like that there. And a lot of areas they had little tools that people could use at home, and they'd have them in the lunchbox, you know, then.
Did you find that very often?
Sometimes you did. But most of the time, a lot of guys, they had a tool that their favorite tool, and they didn't trust leaving it there, and they took it home and they brought it back. But you couldn't do that. There's Black & Decker, those little screwdrivers and stuff like that. But it would be, you know, you could tell when a person was intending to do it, if a person would just do it.
So, being a security guard, were there things that made you, what types of things would make you check a person a little bit more closer than another?
Well, most of the time you could tell. I mean, most of the time you get when a person start hesitating before he gets to you. You know, before he got to you. And then when he turned sideways or something, you ask him to step in the gatehouse. Because they look a little, they act like there's something going on.
What's the largest thing you ever caught somebody trying to leave the building with?
a quarter panel, it on the side of it. It was probably about that big a piece of it. And I saw it, and he had a varsity jacket on. And I said, I looked at him, I said, "Come here." And I never get that. He said, "I never did that before. I never took nothing before." And I said, "God, that's dumb." I said, "What? It was sticking out. It was sticking out the back." And it was the thing. But I tell you, now one day I went to work when I was a dispatcher, and a guy was having some problems. And the dispatcher I relieved told me this guy got some time off, and he's an older guy, mm-hmm. and he had never got time off. He never had no time off. Mm-hmm. And he said, the guy said, he's going home, he's going to get a gun, and he's coming back. So something told me, this ain't right. And so I called the police. And I told him, and we had an address book too, and I told him, and mm-hmm. his name. So I told the police, and I said, maybe it's just a prank. They caught him on the corner of Martin Luther King and Mount Hope, mm-hmm. that he was packing.
Yeah.
And I said, this isn't a big joke no more, you know what I mean? This job is getting a little dangerous, you know. And then the like I said, then the years of the riots, it was different, you know. Could see people sometimes, but people drove by and threw bricks. So, you know, we had to make patrols, and we'd go up and they threw rocks through the windows. Somebody threw rocks through the window, you know. So like,
they threw rocks in the windows.
They drove by and threw rocks up to the fishermen.
Cheryl McQuaid, is that one of the reasons that they blocked up the windows?
No, the guys were whistling at the school kids, the girls.
And the auto workers.
And so they have girls come up to the windows, bring them something like lunch or a bottle of beer, and hand it to them. It used to be you could go right out to they could go sneak through there and go to Harry's. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of elephant, and it cut down on the heat too, because it was they blocked it up. But then you could just order everything swung out. Mm-hmm. They're back in the day.
So I know that on Fisher Body, we had Verlinden Elementary on one side and Sexton High School on the other. Yeah. Now, there were some things that the security, you guys helped to. When did they start helping the kids cross at Verlinden? When did that start?
Well, that was before. When I went on in 66, they were helping kids on down there, crossing guard down there, because that was a bad corner. And now they got a crossing guard down there. That corner, the people used to fly out of that. How the parking lot, mm-hmm. run in the back of each other. In this kind of weather, mm-hmm. they wouldn't clean the windows would be kind of, they waiting for the windows to clear up, and they'd run in the back of a car in front of them and everything.
Mm-hmm. So you guys would help the kids.
Yeah,
they'd
go out there and wear a thing to slow down
Cheryl McQuaid. When the plant, after the plant had closed down, we were kind of scavenging to try to find memorabilia for the history team. And I went down into, I believe they called it the vault years ago, and it was right across from the security desk back into a basement area. Yeah. And there was closets there. It looked like plant security closets when we had our own plant security. And I could see the names of different plant security officers. And we found a stop sign down there that looked like maybe it had been made in the plant. Uh-huh. Was that, what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that we used down there. We used to leave our clothes. We had a dry cleaners come in and do the cleaning. And we used to leave our winter clothes and then when the winter we left our summer clothes in there, we had free dry cleaning service, and that's what we stored, where we stored everything.
So you remember that stop sign?
Oh yeah.
Who made the stop sign? Do you know?
Probably Bob Songer.
And who's he?
He's dead now, but I said he used to do a lot of things for us. He worked in he's a millwright, and he worked for for Fisher Body. He did a lot of things like that.
So, and that was to help, he made that sign to help plant security do their job and go out and cross the children and make sure that the neighborhood children were safe.
Yeah. Excellent. You probably remember him as the bunny and charities he would he'd dress up in the Santa Claus outfit and all that stuff.
Too. Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. That was Bob Summer. He's lived in Grand Ledge.
No. I know that sometimes, Madam Coulter, sometimes you, the security guards would have to come out and open employees' lockers.
Yeah.
When you did that, sometimes somebody forgot their lock or they just needed to get into somebody's locker. What was the most interesting thing you found or stumbled upon opening a locker?
One day, I opened up a locker in Building 7 locker room, and on my way out, I looked up one of the small lockers, and it was full of money.
Full of money?
And I called up my boss and came up there. We locked it back up. But we locked it back up, but I was looking for somebody to say that somebody went and, you know, took some money out of there. But nobody ever reported any money missing. I thought, you know, that, but I just couldn't, it was loose. But it was small bills, $5 and $1 bills, but it was stuck in there. And you look up there, and it popped open.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that, and you know, I thought it was a setup. You know, I'm looking around, and somebody gonna see if I'm gonna steal this, take this money. You know,
so candid camera was hot then.
So I looked around, and I told that there to presume. But it's and then I one day millwright went and a sanitation guy found a wallet, and. And he had $700. The guy had $700, and it was like, I called him up about. I see his address and stuff in there. I called him up about 2 a.m, and he told me he lost his wallet. So I said, hey, you know, we found your wallet. He said, well, did you, Mac? I said, yeah. He said, sometime tomorrow I'll get in there and get it. I'm looking at it. You know what I'm saying? You know, most people are going to say, you know, they go, wow. You know what I mean? He acted like it was no big deal. Mm-hmm. He acted like it was no big deal. And then I had a homeless, a guy who was picking up bottles one day. And he went, and he brought in $200. Somebody dropped it coming from Harry's.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it and I put it in the lost and found. I told him, I said, that, you know, after 30 days, you can come in and claim that. We had to find that guy, catch him out there, and bring him down there to get the money. I was like this, and he come in there, he said, but it's not mine. I said, well, I said, you know, the period of time it went by, you can have it. But there wasn't no wallet or nothing, just on my money.
Now, speaking of homeless people, I know sometimes they used to say that people lived inside the plant, or people maybe who didn't necessarily need to be inside or within. Did you ever run into any people like that?
There wasn't that many lived in it. There was guys who stayed there. There was they had a guy who was a World War II guy who lived on the roof. And he stayed in one of the heater houses. And he would sneak in the railroad gates and go out that way. And they people saw him and they kept reporting him, but we thought it was a booth cleaner or something because they said he was dirty. So then they went and he came down and stole somebody's lunch. Then they saw him and they called us and we got him and we took him outside. He was staggered. He was really bad and he was older. Was really bad and the police came and got him. Mm-hmm. But he was a war hero. He just had a breakdown. But we had guys who went through divorces who wouldn't live in there, but they would stay in there. Like if they had problems at home, they would stay in the in the locker rooms and lay on the benches there and stay. They couldn't stay on. They could make sure they didn't get on the cushions and stuff, but they'd lay there and you knew they was there. But they couldn't live there. They couldn't stay there.
Had to go home.
Yeah.
So you've been through a lot of transitions.
Yeah.
Kind of changing boats here. You went from being a line worker, mm-hmm. and then you became security.
Yeah.
And GM was GM security salary,
mm-hmm.
but it then changed hands to Pinkerton and to Securitas.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that transition, how that was for you from going from GM security to Pinkerton and security? Was that a big switch on how you did things? How was that going from one company to another?
It didn't change a whole lot how you did things, but it was a lot different than money. General Motors paid a lot more money.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt I was blessed, so
mm-hmm.
I didn't bother me. Because I went to General Motors, you started out real low salary.
Mm-hmm.
And it built up, and got enormous in the 70s, mm-hmm. you know. But you got used to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ups and downs, you know that there's going to be down times, and mm-hmm. like when the plant went down or something like that, or when we went on strike, this mm-hmm. the strike pay was $6 a week.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't want to go on strike too much. Unemployment was, for that first time I went, unemployment, I think it was $20-something a week. And then it went up to $30.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a, you didn't want the plant to go down. Mm-hmm. You know, tell you that's what you.
Speaking of strikes, how did that affect your job when the UAW went on strike and when you, as a security guard?
Not me, it didn't. They had a better strike benefits after I went out of.
No, I meant as a security guard.
That's what I meant. I said it was so you didn't have the animosity. You know, people were pissed off, you know. I mean, now a person get laid off, they're not bad, you know. Back when mm-hmm. I was working and you got laid off, I mean, your money got thin,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but now, I said, then I'd stop and talk to them, you know, talk to the guys, and, you know, and mm-hmm. I knew most of them, I knew a lot of them, so it was, you didn't get any, you know, no you got it. I think I only had like four or five bomb threats in my life. And I said, that's a different experience.
They call into a threat to the plant?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know that?
Well, I knew we had them.
Oh, yeah.
I knew we had evacuations.
No, they didn't evacuate in the first years I went out there. And they just kept it. You know, I mean, he's just bullshit. I mean, that's kind of had to. But when people start getting a little crazier, then they start really, you know, we evacuate this plant. I think Fisherbody only been evacuated about two times, haven't they? Not very many times. That guy called me up and told me he was going to. Then we got a form you have to, you know. It's for kind of a funny form because it says you're supposed to, you know, you try to keep him on the phone, talk to him. I bull stuff him, you know. But then they ask you what color the guy is, you know, what nationality he is, mm-hmm. all that stuff there. Well, you know, if they had an accent or something like that, but you're sitting up there talking to the guy. Well, the guy called and he told me he's going to blow up. What? He said he used to work there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking to him, and I said, do you know where the bomb is? And he said, what you trying to do, catch me? I said, no. I said, because I got it. I told him, I said, you know, I said, I coach at Sexton, and I got a game this weekend. I'd hate to get blown up. He said, oh, it's at the north end. He said, it's out by the parking lot towards Saginaw. I said, oh, you mean towards Saginaw? So I'm just talking to him, and we was getting it on there. I said, yeah. He said, and I said, and then I said, you didn't go to Sexton, did you? He said, no, I'm not from around here. I just want to know. I said, you know, because I said, I said, kids would be disappointed if I didn't show up. I'd probably, you know, it was kind of funny, but it wasn't funny because I told the boss come down, and Martin was a plant manager, system plant manager then, and he said, what do you think we should do? I said, if he'd have said it was down this, if he said it was down in this area here, I said, evacuate this sucker now. I said, crying a lot. If it's this close, I want to get out of here.
Uh-huh.
But no, it was that was kind of funny. But it wasn't. We used to go look for them. We'd look for Bob, which was I think a little different now. We bring in people.
Now you bring people in.
You go look in waste baskets and stuff, and it's kind of that was kind of dumb. I mean, because if it was a bomb, you know, you're gonna die.
So I know that You've done a lot for the employees. Now, you said you also coach at the schools?
Yes, Sexton.
And you still coach there?
Yeah. I got into the Hall of Fame this past year.
Oh, congratulations.
Yay.
Yeah. Kinda. Excellent.
I started Magic and Jay Vincent. I had quite a few of the big names.
So you played the Pee Wee Leagues and the...
I still work with Pee Wee, but I go with most of the time at Sexton.
At Sexton.
Yeah, because back when I was younger, I could do both of them.
So you sat there and you coached there, and so in total, about how many years would you say you've been tough coaching?
Probably 30.
For 30 years.
Yeah.
So actually for 30 years you've had not one job, not two jobs, but three jobs.
Well, I don't call coaching a real job.
That's a pleasure.
Yeah.
Mr. McFadden, Cheryl McQuaid, I always heard, and I'm hoping that you can tell me whether or not there's any truth to this, but I've always heard that the houses around the Sexton and Fisher Body area were built for Fisher Body executives. Do you know anything about that, or?
No, I don't remember that. Now, my brother graduated from Sexton in '46. Mm-hmm. My oldest brother, and there wasn't that many houses. There was over here by the park and everything. There were woods. I remember coming here, and there were woods over there. They wouldn't build. It wasn't built up in there, but a lot of your big wheels that lived on around every drive in there, them houses in there, they were. But I don't know if they were General Motors executives or not, because back then I don't remember the executives living there. A lot of people from like foremans and stuff lived in there, and people worked in office because they could walk to work. But I remember a lot of doctors that had houses on there, that because I went to school with their kids and stuff. But the house has been there a long time. See, I remember being at grade school. I went to Willow, but we used to come to Sexton, and on Saturday, because the coaches would open up the gym and let you play basketball and stuff. I remember going through there, and the houses weren't that close together. They'd have a lot of lots and stuff. But then all of a sudden, they start filling in their lots.
Another thing that I've heard about Fisher Body is that there are tunnels all under there. I've heard that there's a tunnel that goes to Harry's. There's a tunnel that goes downtown.
No.
Are there any tunnels under there? And if there are, where do they go?
They're the steam tunnels.
Oh, steam tunnels.
Yeah, that you see that when you see all that steam coming out of the ground, they run from Building 13 to the powerhouse.
Building 13 being 3X? Is that Building 13?
It used to be where 15 and 13 is. That's where the downwards. It ran to the powerhouse, and then it ran. Then they got one that run over those. That's the one that you see going through the parking lot over here, and you go down Martin Luther King, you see a steam coming up. That balance is a steam tunnel, they call it, and that's the tunnels that they're using. But it's not. We had people go down there. Well, I mean, like, you're supposed to go down there with a partner. I went down there one time when they had a leak, and it's not nice. It's a little slimy, slippery down there. And you know that when they work down there, you have to have just like going into confined space. But it's not a tunnel just to get. You never go to Harry's. They never make a tunnel to go to Harry's. Yeah, but I said, but no, it did go to the powerhouse. because that's where the steam ramp and the powerhouse up into the plant.
And one more thing, they used to say that we made our own power and sold our excess to Board of Water and Light. Do you know anything about that?
We used to do it. I don't know if we sold it to Board of Water and Light, but I knew we used to have our own. We had coal furnaces, and they used to you'd go by there, and they would see them putting coal in. They had coal piles out there that they big old bulldozers pushing the coal into the. I said, but I didn't know if they sold it to Board of Water and Light. I think Board of Water and Light do all of it now, don't they?
I believe so. Yeah.
But I said that was a. I said I didn't know about you selling it.
Mr. McFadden, Merrill Holter, you grew up in Lansing. You've been here all your life.
Yes.
And Fisher Body's been here for all your life.
Yeah.
Now that, as we know it, is getting ready to go.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts about that?
It was like losing a real close friend. Nobody really believed that that they were going to get rid of Fisher Body. I mean, they said this was back, in the 60s. Then when they're going to get rid of it, you know, and I said, now I just can't believe it, you know, that when I was working the night last, they took the security off of the gate. Mm. You know, the gates over there, they locked them up, and I just couldn't believe it. I told some of the guys that used to work with, you know, worked over there. And they had said, can you believe it? I said, no, I never thought I'd ever see. Now, one is different because they're adding the new plant now is
Grand River plant. So when you speak of one, you're speaking of the old Oldsmobile factory.
The real old, the
original.
The originals. Uh-huh. They tore some of that down and they increased it. Mm-hmm. The Grand River gate.
Yeah.
It's Grand River plant. So that there sounds like General Motors, but you don't really think of General Motors getting rid of a whole plant.
Now that's as an ex-employee, but now you live on Lahoma.
Yeah.
Lahoma's not far from Fisher Body. Yeah. Being a neighbor, living in a neighborhood where the factory was, what was that like?
Nice. I could walk to work if I wanted to.
I know at one time they had plants and neighbors had problems with the emissions and the
very
sounds.
Very few people.
Very few.
I was a dispatcher, and it would be the same person who smelled something that I talked too loud. They could hear me give the line time, and so. That's my fault. I'll do it different.
You know, you said something that brings back a memory for me. You were the dispatch person and being a person on the line.
Yeah.
You always announced the line time because for many of us, you were considered to be the voice. And if you would please, for those people, could you announce the line time?
Line time for the night shift is C line, 9 hours. B line, 8.8. Repeat. C line, 9 hours. B line, 8.8.
And that was the voice.
And it was kind of, it was nice. It was a good job.
We always knew their you were always one that we could understand exactly how long we were going. We didn't sound like we were being muffled.
Oh, when I cut it short, though, I got people who would say little nasty things when they go, they thought I controlled the line time.
Uh-huh.
Cried out loud, this is a heck of a time, this is a doggone holiday, and you're working this overtime. I never heard of you. Okay. Have a good week. Have a good weekend.
See ya. Mr. McFadden, is there anything that you'd like to share with people that we haven't touched on?
Oh, I enjoyed my years at General Motors, and one of my sons started at Fisher Body. He's in Flint now. He's on skilled trades down there, but it's been good to my family and been good to me. Mm-hmm. So I have no regrets. I kind of hurt that they, is when they tear it down a little bit. But you'll be surprised the amount of people that came back just to see the place when they heard it was the last days. Mm-hmm. I didn't go over, but I saw people that came by and see me. And they said they went up there and looked at the old area, you know. And they said a lot of people, they felt real close to it. It was a different place.
Thank you for sharing your memories with us.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay. Yeah.